This is Carte Blanche, the podcast. One story every day that matters. Delve into the issues that impact you. Whether you're in need of a better understanding of the world around you or simply seeking inspiration or unique perspectives, you'll find it all here.
Several political parties, both big and small, are coming out in full force as the elections creep ever closer. But what's truly on offer? And how capable are the many political parties of sticking to those promises? We speak to Eyewitness News Politics Associate Editor and Politicking host Tsidi Madia about manifestos, the biggest potential losers, own goals, and whether your chosen party is willing to sell its soul in the coalition's game.
There's a lot going on, Tsidi. How tired are you? You are running one of the country's biggest newsrooms, right? And it's a silly season, as we're saying, with elections. There's a lot to be churned out. Your reporters are on the ground. They're literally all over the place. How difficult is it to keep that kind of content and your audience engaged in that content? Because people do get politics fatigued sometimes.
What I can tell you, Masa, is I pull them towards the politics. You need to look at politics slightly differently. I do know that people think it's high-level gossip, but actually it's not. It's something that permeates every aspect of our lives. When you go buy bread, the quality of the roads that you walked, whether or not you feel safe going there, the spaza shop or the big enterprise that you engage with, the people that you meet, all those nitty-gritties, those avenues of our lives are actually shaped by politics. So every sphere of our lives is informed by politics. And I think that's been the conversation with a lot of our colleagues. EWN has been quite deliberate in these elections that it's not actually about the politicians. It's about the citizens. It's about how South Africans are engaging this country 30 years into democracy, how South Africans feel about the fact that they're going to elections. We tend to be, as media, quite focused in the areas where we exist, which is mostly quite urban. So it's also been a period for me to deliberately push journalists out of these areas. It's important to explore other aspects of South Africa, to speak to different people, to also avoid being an echo chamber where we are regurgitating the same message about what the quality of life is. In areas where people didn't have taps, the priorities are very different to what they are when I'm complaining about a pothole. But we are both just as important and as crucial to South Africa's democratic project. So it is finding that way where you bring politics to the people and make them realize that it's actually about you.
The stories that do well with our audience as well is when you add the human. It's not necessarily a sit down with a high-rise politician, but it's the story where you kind of exposing maybe a municipality's irregular expenditure or a tender that's gone wrong. Even though it's not a local election, those are the issues that still resonate with our audience. But I want to go into the fair share of promises that you have been hearing. A lot of South Africans are seeing politicians on what they think is their best behavior right now, trying to woo and romance the audience. And it just feels like those early stages of a relationship, doesn't it? Where everyone's putting their best foot forward, replying on time and everything. Of these promises, I want us to start with the new kids on the block, because there is a lot of excitement around them. Let's talk about the new parties. What have you made of the proposition that these parties have brought?
So what's really difficult, Masa, with all the parties, including the established ones and these new ones, it's very hard to move away, funny enough, from what the ANC promises in terms of policy. Because the ANC's policy, by and large, are actually well thought out. The failure is in implementation. So what you often find is you'll find variations of ANC policies and proposals, no matter what the party it is that you engage with. But in terms of the new parties, I start with Bosa, for instance, makes really bold promises when you look at his manifesto and what he says he'll represent. But the difficulty of that is actually Musi Mamani hasn't shaken off the remnants of the DA from him. In fact, Masa, you could make an argument that the manifesto that Bosa put forward was a 2019 manifesto from the DA. He ran away with the jobs manifesto from the DA, repurposed it and gave it to us again. So it's very hard to look at Bosa and feel like there's some level of believability in what he's proposing, because we've seen this movie before. I feel like things are slightly different for me with watching Horizon Mzansi, because you watch them and you think that they're an urban party, but they again are actually doing quite a bit of work in rural areas. It's also this rise of professionals who feel that they've been overlooked by politics. They say that they're bringing seriousness into politics. What's interesting for me about Rise Mzansi isn't necessarily what they say. It's actually the reaction and the response for more established organizations to its existence. I mean, the Western Cape, it's called a mercenary party. You're watching ANC supporters take pot shots at it. But the fact that it was starting to set trends and make established organizations think twice about what they're doing, the reason why Julius Malema's tones are slightly more muted is because parties like Rise are appealing. I mean, the EFF historically has been supported by Black professionals who felt unseen and couldn't find a home. Here's a party that's more moderate, that might speak its language, that becomes a threat to a party like the EFF. So you're watching different, bigger political parties either becoming unhinged like John Steenhuisen or changing tact and language because of the existence of small parties like a Rise Mzansi. I think that they have a well-researched message. They have clarity about who and what they're trying to be, and they're heartful, and they're making it quite clear. But you can be heartful and do something about it as opposed to give up altogether. And I think that is a threat to those who are comfortable in established organizations.
I must say, a lot of the criticism that's going to Rise, I was quite shocked that it's coming from all angles, from the ANC, from the DA, and from the EFF, which could allude to the fact that they probably are nervous about Rise being able to attract all three of those former voters.
I agree with you. I think it's untested, uncharted territory, but there is a threat to all three parties. What's interesting is Rise Mzansi, unlike Umkhonto we Sizwe party, hasn't attempted to run for by-elections. Their sole focus are the national elections and, of course, the provinces. But a new party that's testing its might and trying to show itself has actually been Umkhonto we Sizwe. So the threat there is quite clear. When you look at KwaZulu-Natal, you look at the fact that it's taking voters from EFF, ANC, it's taking from everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Then you go, that's an interesting thing. Rise Mzansi has not put itself in that position where we can see what its capabilities could be. There is no litmus test. For now, it's just watching Black people with relatable, I mean, Songhees has a rural accent, right? So somebody who they worry that Black people could find to be relatable, but also the same people who professionals might be able to relate to. They have a set of professionals from all walks of life, of all races. And to some degree, some will make an argument that Rise Mzansi speaks to the South Africa that people want to see, one that's united and focused on the things that need to happen. And I think that vision is problematic for parties that are competing for space. So it makes sense that they will take pot shots and be threatened by it. I mean, in the Western Cape, it's not an Afrikaans-speaking white community. It's a white, English-speaking white community. That is something that the DA enjoys support from. But you also have a patriotic alliance that's a threat. So if the DA is facing a threat from a PA, as far as the colored vote is concerned, and then with the Conservatives, there is a Rise Mzansi that's appealing to them, the DA is actually in trouble. I've been making this argument for long, that it's not just Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal. Western Cape is just as vulnerable as those two other provinces. And the political parties are responding in a way that articulates that. In fact, very quickly, I'd argue, people didn't even realize that the DA is in trouble in the Western Cape until the federal leader of the DA started making utterances, forcing people to pay attention to what is actually happening in the province.
That was actually like watching an own goal live in action, because
But how many on goals must one actually score?
There's been too many. I think we've lost count now. And when we're talking about that litmus test that you were mentioning earlier with Umkhonto we Sizwe, even the Patriotic Alliance, when we're looking at these by-election results as well, it is quite interesting how they're performing in the Western Cape.
The Patriotic Alliance is not a joke for the DA. It's a real threat. It speaks to a constituency that was ignored, and now here's somebody that they can relate to. And it's not taking a long time. There were by-elections, Masa. Those by-election results should scare the DA. This close, we are weeks away from elections. And if you're looking and trying to feel where the texture is, there's something wrong. But what I also wonder about is when you watch the reaction of the federal leader of the DA, what I often ask myself is, where's everybody else to try and pull him away from the abyss to say, you are further alienating our constituency. We rely on a colored vote. We rely on a Black vote to make those people feel that we are a party that doesn't want to embrace democracy, that people are not allowed to also vie for power here is problematic. But it's also an admission, really, that you know that communities that you've neglected over the years. It's an admission of that. And that also makes it easy for parties like the PA to campaign in those areas because of responses, again, the on goals. I actually asked myself, as I was saying to you now, whether other leaders in the party are watching this train wreck? And why is it that they're not pulling the federal leader away from it? Because one would say, please stop. Actually, don't do that any longer. Don't go to provinces because you are now a liability. And when you're there, journalist questions are not about what's on offer for the electorate. You are causing conflict as far as this campaign is concerned. But maybe, just maybe, wildly, maybe that is actually the modus operandi. Maybe that is the campaign plan. It makes no sense to me. It doesn't appeal to the so-called Freedom Front vote that they were chasing in the last elections. It's just really, really odd. It's very bizarre.
Staying on the new kids, I actually am quite interested by the fact that I thought that the Patriotic Alliance's geopolitical stance on Israel and Palestine would lose them favor, a lot of favor, particularly in the Western Cape and particularly with the colored vote. And if we're looking at this by election results, that has not been the case.
Isn't that weird? I also thought the same thing. I also think that the Middle East issue is so heated, it's so important, but it is actually strong enough to split support. There are people who left the DA because of a lack of clarity, because you won't come out in support of the Palestinian cause. So I thought that the outright unapologetic stance in support of Israel would actually punish the Patriotic Alliance, but we don't know. We actually don't know up until we actually see it, because I'm worried about what do areas like Lunasia and Eldorado Park do? You must remember, there's also an Al Jamaa that is there on offer that speaks to those very communities as well. And I think it's a question of, can you afford to support an Al Jamaa? Because Al Jamaa also has incredibly extreme ideas about what society ought to be. But also, with the identity politics being what they are, I'm not surprised that feeling that you can relate to somebody who looks like you might trump some of their views.
I think, yeah, that there's a big wait and see game as well when it also comes to Botha and Rise, because they may also just have a very good communication strategy, a marketing strategy, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's guaranteed vote. I mean, I was doing a story in rural Eastern Cape recently, and there are Rise and Zanzi posters everywhere. But, you know, what does that actually mean?
Will it translate to seats? We don't know. What I think is interesting is, and I think I must have asked Songhe Zozibi this question once, that it's got to be a long game. You will not get to where you claim you want to be in these elections. You might come in for the seat or two. I do think that they might be able to secure a seat or two. I struggle to see Botha's prospects, I'll be honest. Musi Maimane remains one of the most popular politicians in our country, but people don't know what he's offering. It's very difficult to see what his political future is. And for me, it mostly stems from that report that was done about him in 2019 in the DA, because he hasn't proven it wrong. In fact, he made mistakes that led to his demise in the DA. I don't know if his campaign came out fast, strong enough in order for him to capitalize on his popularity. In fact, I'd make an argument that if you're comparing Botha and Rise, Rise definitely had a stronger elections machinery on the ground much, much sooner. It took off and did the groundwork in rural areas. I think that's what people also undermine, is that they did go to rural areas.
Action SA, I would have thought that this was going to be their year to boast. Am I seeing them enough?
So my thoughts about Action SA, 2021, Action SA would have ridden off of Emmen Mashaba's mayorship. It was easy for residents in Johannesburg to remember him when he was DA mayor. It was easy to sell Emmen Mashaba because he's known here. They have a harder task now because they're looking to provinces and national elections. So people don't know Emmen Mashaba. Some might know his business story, but they don't know what he has to offer, politically speaking. They've been able to build structures across the provinces. They're contesting pretty much every province. But in terms of how well they'll fare, I'm not too sure. I do know that Action SA, looking at Soweto, was actually a threat that the ANC had detected. The ANC was never threatened by the existence of the EFF. Its polls were telling it to worry about Action SA. And that's the sentiment that I got from last year, is that a Soweto would welcome Emmen Mashaba. But I also think Emmen Mashaba is a leader who doesn't necessarily exude confidence if you're watching him in interviews. I think people who are around him speak quite strongly about him because this is not a consummate politician. He's not a trained politician, and he owns that. I don't know what it meant to be mayor. I didn't know. And that, by the way, sometimes works in his favor. People find it to be incredibly endearing that here's a man who says, actually, I don't know, but I want the best for this country. I've watched over the past few months with Action and Say, there's a toning down on the issue of immigration. It's a hot ticket issue. And I think he's toned down his language to try and sound less xenophobic, if you may. But I think that's understanding.
I must tell you, Tudy, I also hosted him on this very podcast for the elections for Carte Blanche. Yes. And when I posed that to him, that he has toned down his message when it comes to the issue of immigration, he was not impressed by that. He said he got the same stance.
What?
He still believes in this. And it is tapered down.
But we are hearing it. If we're all hearing the same thing, we're not crazy. You can't deny what all of us are picking up at different instances about your messaging over a period of time. We are watching it. I just said to you again, the EFF is toning down its language too. It's trying to open itself up to different constituencies. These elections are that difficult that you must think beyond your base, but you must also work extra hard, at least if you're the ANC, to appease your base. Hence, they spend the amount of time they do in Soweto.
Speaking of Soweto, last week we had former President Thabo Mbeki on Thursday on the campaign trail, leading the campaign trail in Soweto. What do you make of that, Tidi, that they have gotten out Thabo Mbeki to come and campaign for them, but specifically in Soweto? And why on a random Thursday?
Because they're campaigning every day. You can't afford to wait for Saturday and Sunday to campaign. And I think it's more manageable during the week. I think that having a former president in a shopping mall, I've been in those scrums. It's not a walk in the park. And you can't manage it as well on the weekend as you possibly could during the week. I think Thabo Mbeki is an interesting figure. You must remember, part of the ANC's downward trajectory in Gauteng is because of how Mbeki was treated in the ANC. His removal from office, this anti-clever black sentiment that the party took, where they rejected actually what is the essence of the ANC, because this is a party founded by lawyers. So they were actually clever blacks. But to reject all of that was something that affected the ANC quite badly. But one thing we do know is that Thabo Mbeki remains a figure that's much loved, particularly in this province. I spoke to him last year and I asked him about campaigning. And, you know, at the time he said, it's a good question. I can't answer it at the moment because lots of wrong things are still happening in the ANC and I can't possibly go out to people to say vote for this party that's still doing wrong things. But I watched him last Thursday, Masa. He had ANC pamphlets with Cyril Ramaphosa's face on it. We have seen the reports, the letters where he seemingly is not very impressed with the president. He's not happy about Palapala and its handling. In fact, when you look at a lot of the messaging from Mbeki over the previous years, it's to suggest that actually he thinks Cyril Ramaphosa should not be president. But there he was holding a pamphlet with Cyril Ramaphosa's face on it saying, vote for this party. But I think that Mbeki himself saying, you know, as a senior leader of the ANC, he also takes responsibility for the ANC's failures. But when you have a former president, Jacob Zuma, decampaigning your organization, you look to what are your strongest weapons. And the one thing we know, at least as journalists, is Mbeki somebody who's missed. And that walkabout, the footage, Masa, that I saw last week was incredible, purely because here's a man that I said people missed. And he spoke about what it was like for him campaigning in Soweto. So it's that. It's a period right now where parties are trying to have voter contact, where parties are trying to service their core supporters. The ANC's stronghold remains Soweto. The ANC knows that if Soweto doesn't come out to vote for it, it might as well be, as the young people say, it's tickets. It's over. So there's no
It's chai time,
you know? So they know that they need to service the voters in Soweto. If you pay attention, Soweto residents are currently getting transformers every other week. The issues that they've been having around service delivery are suddenly being responded to. My question is, what are other townships, suburban areas in Gauteng thinking as they watch this? We know that Soweto is a massive share of the population size, but you're watching the governing party using its incumbency, and I suppose that's a benefit of incumbency, in order to do this one thing. So it's been a very interesting thing to watch unfolding, but I also understand why, because voting, or elections rather, are about numbers, and you go where you believe the numbers will be. So you go and you service those communities and you go and you plead with those communities and you bring your big guns, i.e. Thabo Mbeki.
There's been a lot of speculation that the ANC might completely lose this time. But you know what? People say that, I think, on every election, and it doesn't happen.
This is the most difficult elections yet for them. It's the closest they really will be of going under. I wouldn't be surprised if they went under.
The ANC in coalitions at a provincial and national level Can you imagine that?
Disaster.
Can you imagine how busy you would be?
I'd hate my life. I'm already complaining. I'd be so unhappy. I think it depends on who they're going to coalition with. That with, if they're looking for stability, and it's a conversation that they're having amongst themselves a lot, a heck of a lot. Externally, they'll tell you that they're not thinking about coalitions, but they're looking at the same polls. They're looking at the same trajectory as the rest of us. They know how they performed in 2021, in 2019, so they know exactly where they're going. I think that maybe we can make an argument that at national, the ANC can retain power. I do think that at provincial level, there is a lot of real possibility. When you look at KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng, please don't remove Western Cape from your conversations around what is possible, because that also could easily fall into a coalition. I think that the school of thought in the ANC, there's two different schools of thought, but mostly it does lean towards working with the DA. But what the ANC tends to do is to look for smaller parties to partner with. So they're hoping that even if they don't get 50 plus one, there's a slightly under. So in that 40, 45 margin, so that they can bring in a Shuluba, bring in a smaller Nyana party, a Rise, maybe not Rise, but definitely good that they've worked with the AIC. So they'll find a smaller partner to work with. They've done that in the Ekurhuleni. They've done that in other places. So that's not unique. That's actually how the ANC, I think, thinks a coalition would best work. But there's also a school of thought in the ANC that says the most stable coalition will come from having the DA and the ANC working together. These are political opponents, traditional enemies, and that they'll be able to check one another. There is a school of thought that also exists, funny enough, in the DA, in spite of them being part of this multi-party charter. They want power. People want to be in the seat of power. There's an official in the ANC who said to me, I know what they all say to you in the public space, but what they're not saying is that they're all talking to us because they all realize that they want to do this with us. It's almost like watching an episode of The Bachelor and they're all fighting to give the ANC the rose. Like it's really an episode of The Bachelor. That's what I always think when I watch all of them when it comes to coalition. I'm like, they're either hoping to get the rose from the ANC, they're hoping to get the rose from the ANC. That's what everyone is doing. It's really something else.
Why do you think the EFF wants the finance department?
It's the coffers, isn't it? It's the country's coffers. It's such an interesting thing for me watching the EFF because, so here's a party that people will say to you, oh, it's going to loot. But it's a party that says to you, we really, really want to show that we're capable of governance. Give us a chance. We are government in waiting. I don't think they've made much with the opportunity given to them in the Ekurhuleni. That should be cause for concern, I think, for voters. You're given the opportunity. What do you do with it? Services have deteriorated. I live there. So I worry about why they want their hands on the kitty. It's quite concerning. I really wish that this was a party that remembered it said it wants an opportunity to lead because it can do better for the people. And that's what you're seeing. What I also find really problematic about all these parties, all of them, is they talk about how they care about the interests of everyone. But if you listen to them, each and every one of them, when it comes to negotiations, they tell you how they all rock up with lists of self-interest. It's actually quite scary how the arrogance of self-interest that the elite put above everyone else and they put on display for all of us. They're so bold and so unapologetic about how they carry themselves. And this is something that we see. So these elections, hey, you've been told about a moonshot pact, you've been told about doomsday. It doesn't matter. And I think that's what I'd hope for South Africans to look at, is each and every one of these parties have actually made a case for and against themselves on their own. It's one thing to listen to the manifestos, which, mind you, are wish lists. It's promises that can't be fulfilled because in order to move the needle in any direction, you need numbers. And if you're going to a coalition, you're not going to have numbers. They could not even come together to fully complete their vision of expropriation without compensation. So how are we to believe that in a coalition, when everybody's looking out for self-interest, that they'll think about us? I find it very difficult to believe in anyone in our political space. I'd love to see maturity. Because the minute we start seeing maturity and we start seeing parties remembering that you and I and our Sophie and Mang and Lindy and Butabi, so we all matter, then you are okay. You can have a hand council. It'll be fine because they're putting the interests of the people ahead of them. That's not what we've been seeing. And it's quite devastating, to be honest.
There's just this cloud of confusion of, okay, great. We've done this amazing thing. We've gotten the most amount of people to register to vote. Fantastic. Now that big amount of people is scratching their heads and saying, but who to vote for?
Yeah, I think that there is a part where we take responsibility as citizens. I always make a joke when people ask me on social media about it and I go, oh, I'm reading manifestos. But actually, I am reading manifestos and I'm watching the parties. A manifesto tells you one side of the picture, but observing how the parties carry themselves, how they engage with other parties, how they engage with citizens, tells you more about what the party is. I'm studying and I'm hoping that citizens are studying these parties. There's a litany of errors on goals, the likes, the works, you know. An ANC that's literally fumbled from start to finish is asking for another chance. He's beyond me, but that's our reality. How a party that says it's waiting to be in government squanders that first opportunity is wild. How a party that has a province in its name in the Western Cape, that it has an opportunity to showcase what it can do for South Africa, it again fumbles and squanders that is actually wild, but that's what we have in established parties. So I do think people need to do their homework. You need to look around you. I think what's interesting about these elections is that South Africans, they don't care where you're leaning. They care about the issues. It's paycheck issues. They care about bread and butter. And then conflated issues. South Africans will tell you about the quality of their streets in these national elections, because it's not just enough for them to vote for you without thinking about what it means. They're thinking about crime. They're thinking about unemployment. So it is a very interesting space that we're in. And I hope South Africans make good use of it. It's a wonderful opportunity. It's not the only opportunity we have to participate and to engage with our democracy, but it's an important one, Masa. And I hope that South Africans are watching and to keep an eye on what the Electoral Commission is doing, but most importantly, what the parties are doing. It is all in service, really, of the electorate, but they must do their part. This is not homework for one. It's homework for all. We must all do our part.
We must all do our part. Tidi Madia, EWRN political editor, thank you so much for sharing your wonderful and insightful brain with us. Good luck for the last few weeks. It is crunch time.
It is crunch time. Thank you so much, guys.
Be sure to follow Carte Blanche, the podcast, to ensure you don't miss any of our election coverage in the weeks to come. And if you have a story to share with our team, why not head on over to the Carte Blanche website and let us know using the Tip Us Off page.